Now, back to At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio. I'm a troubleman.
Everybody could be happy if we hit the Stronach 5 today. $91,000 carryover, and this is when you swing into action. Not that it's not a good bet, you know, every week with the exceedingly low takeout that's attached to it. But between the low takeout and a carryover, now you've got potential for a positive expectation. Brian attacks the Stronach 5 every week. And he joins us now. Brian, good morning.
Yeah, you got me. You got a good vibe working, that's for sure. I don't know if I want to head to the beach bar or what, or just put a ticket in and relax, but I like it.
Well, that's where people will find you all winter, obviously, is at the one of the two tiki bars at Gulfstream.
It's somewhat of a good segue, because before we get going, there is rain in the area. I'm in Fort Lauderdale. It looks like anywhere from 60 to 80%. So everybody that's digging in, take notes and certainly do your due diligence with the scratches. I looked earlier. I didn't see a course condition or anything at Gulfstream, but it rained like cats and dogs yesterday, Steve. Not a Florida rain. I mean all day rain. So just take note, folks, before you dig in the course condition, and we'll see. Hopefully everything stays intact.
Well, of course, I'll make reference to a throwback, the Calder Cloud. For those that are old enough to remember, the fact that the entire South Florida sky could be clear and there would be the cloud that would be hanging over Calder that would bring rain, you know, at least maybe at noon or 1 o'clock, the Calder Cloud.
Welcome to South Florida, right? You know it well.
Should name a horse Calder Cloud, actually. That would be very funny. The sequence, and I gave it at the top of the show, so everybody's familiar, starts at GPW with the 6th at 3:52. Then to Laurel for the 8th and the 9th consecutively, then out to Golden Gate immediately after for the 3rd, and then back to GPW for the anchor leg, the 8th, at 4:54. So in terms of timing, basically 3:50 to 5 o'clock, a little bit more than an hour, everybody can play this, and that's one of the things that makes it fun. For people, Brian, that have not been getting involved in the year that since the Magna 5 kind of came back with the new Stronach moniker, give everybody an overview about, you know, what they should be familiar with, whether it's playing Golden Gate for the first time, or maybe it's Laurel that's going to be new to some people, or for now anyway, Gulfstream West.
Yeah, well, first and foremost, Steve, as you hit on at the top of the show, it's a great, great wager for the better. I mean, it's a 12% takeout, and that's great in and of itself. But, you know, they guarantee it at $100,000 every week, and it's comfortably past that. And now this week, the extra bonus bonanza is that they've got a carryover of $91,000. And, you know, I think the $500 to $750 is in play, and especially because you know, we're kind of in a lull on the racing calendar, for better or worse. It's that Breeders' Cup hangover, and before maybe the Cigar Mile and the Clark weekend at Churchill and that kind of big thing going on. We're at a little bit of a lull in the calendar, and people want to bet. People, you know, Steve, you say that word carryover, and it just attracts people. So there's no doubt today's going to be a big one, and it definitely, the bet as a whole, certainly tests the acumen of the handicapper. As you mentioned, we've got a couple at GPW today in those 7.5 furlong turf races with a tricky starting spot. And then we go to Laurel and then obviously Golden Gate out in California with the Tapita. So it really kind of mixes everything together. And it's, you know, not to speak for the powers that be, but I think it's been a pretty successful wager, and it's put a lot of eyes on a lot of different tracks. And what you said too, Steve, I really like. It's an hour. It's 90 minutes at the most, you know, on certain days. And it's just right there, bang, 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 and you don't kind of have to sit around. I know today they back-to-back at Laurel, but that's typically not something that happens too much. Usually you're going from track to track. So it's all right there in front of you, and it only takes about an hour of your time. So a dollar minimum, too, so keep note of that. That, you know, that can get a little tricky. It's not the typical 50-cent base wager that we're probably used to in this day and age now. But, you know, for the better, and I know you would agree with this, we're always looking in this game. You've got to look for where you can get your advantage. And when you have a 12% takeout coupled with a carryover, I mean, that's as you mentioned, that's when you're supposed to swing.
Agreed. And, you know, whether it ends up being a positive expectation or basically negates the take out down to almost nothing. We'll look to Marshall Graham later this afternoon.
Yeah, there you go.
Once the numbers are announced, Marshall will do the calculations and let everybody know just how great of an opportunity it was. Let's go through the sequence and get some opinions from you. And Brian's analysis each week of the Stronach 5 is at ExpressBet. And I did say earlier in the morning, Brian and I intersect on two different fronts, three really, between Horse Player Now and ExpressBet, and of course Capital OTB.
Well, it's a heck of a trifecta, Steve. What does that mean?
Absolutely, exactly. Let's dive in. This first leg, we've got two-year-old fillies that actually have won races, and we don't get to see a lot of allowances for 2 year olds in New York, but the horse population down in South Florida, particularly because a lot of these have been running since as early as April, May, June. So some of these horses have got real experience. You got horses making their eighth starts in some cases, and they're going to go 7.5 on the turf, basically a circuit at Calder.
Yeah, and this is not as the post position here is not as decisive as it would be at Gulfstream, where basically if you're out wide, you have no chance. Now, you certainly don't want to be out wide at this trip anyway, but I think it alleviates a little bit of a concern. I thought in the sequence, Steve, there were a couple races where maybe you could spread a little bit, and I thought this was certainly one of them. Just in order, and then I'll talk briefly. My A's were 3-2, 1-5, 10. So I think it is a spread. Now I think Biasici and Teacher Drama, the two recent maiden claiming winners with the big figures, certainly hit hard here. And I know taking on winners is never easy, Steve, but I think it's not necessarily a bad thing in a race like this where the proven runners aren't any great shakes, especially a horse like Biasici, who won on debut for Terry Pompei, who does a good job with a good figure. I mean, there's a little turf in the pedigree, not a ton of it, but, I don't think she's got a freak here to be a major player. So I put her on top, but then you look down inside Little Maria on the class drop where she can save all the ground. She's got speed. I think she's a player as well. You look at Lucky Milady, who's never tried turf. But Eddie Plisa does a really, really good job. He's a good enough 13%. And when he rides Paco, I mean, it's a very small sample, but I know he does a lot of this at Monmouth too. 29% overall, but at GPW, it's what I'm looking at 5 for 9. So it's a big angle. And then you go outside, I think the wild card is, as I wrote, is Rain. And I don't necessarily, I don't like the barn that's over 21 at the meet, never been on turf, not a big Tomlinson, if that's your thing. But the drop in class, I think, is significant because, there's some in here that you don't have to trust. So I think if Rain offers a little bit of value, I think you can use her as well. And then I've got 6, 7, and 8 as Bs. If, I break this down into A's and B's just to kind of show people you get a little more bang for your buck by doing kind of the Steve, Chris, instead of steering away from the caveman ticket because you just can't afford them all. You put B's in here, La Venezuela, slow figure, but one on debut over the distance. It's going two turns. That's not easy to do. I know the figure was slow, but, it takes a lot to do that. Baby L's in the mix as well with a two-turn win last time over the course, and then Princess Kerrigan's got some speed on the class drop. So, like I said, Steve, I think this is one of the two races that You can spread a little bit. And I think I was able to do that too, because I have a little bit more condensed opinions going forward.
So the A's again?
The A's, 3-2-1-5-10. The B's would be 6-7-8.
Yeah, and, in order. And the three in particular, and I know Jerry Schottenkirk, who does the GPW work too at ExpressBet, he picked Terry's, you know, the Big Beast. Again, small sample, but Big Beast off to a pretty notable start with his turf runners. Three for seven.
I think at the end of his career, when it kind of went bad, Tony tried him a couple times on turf. I don't remember if he won or not, but he was a tremendously talented horse. Probably one of those horses that was almost too big for his own good. And what was just a monster of a racehorse. They had a heck of a lot of talent. So not really that surprising.
Let's look at the second leg. And here we go to Laurel for race eight, and a mile, flat mile. And of course, at Laurel, you get the opportunity to run a one turn. And this is a nice group.
Yeah. And this is where I kind of drew the line in the sand, Steve, because, you know, I don't necessarily have a budget when I put these together, but I don't really think it does anybody any good if I, you know, have an $800 ticket. We have to be, you know, you know, very logical here of what we're trying to do with a bankroll. So I drew the line in the sand with Warm here, and she's the only one I'm going to use. That's the A. There's no backups. That's it. She's the single. I love what Kieran McGee does in the Mid-Atlantic. It really improved this horse, not necessarily figure-wise, but kept this horse going, I should say, off the claim from Brittany Russell. And it really boils down to the tactical speed of Warm against the, we'll call it the class and the closing run of Indy Union. And I am not an Indy Union fan, and I can say that, Steve, because I've used Indy Union many times. And it's just like, we're not going out anymore. We're all done. And I think her lack of speed, I know nobody's better than Jeremiah in my book. I think he's phenomenal. But I think Warm should be favored. I think, you know, kept this horse going. And just the fact that she's got the tactical speed. And now don't forget, too, this is a one-turn mile at Laurel. And I don't think that's a trip that Indy Union wants anything to do with. And I think she's going to be left with just a little too much to do. So I think in a sequence like this, Steve, especially maybe at a dollar where you're looking at it, you're trying to work on a budget, you've got to just kind of say, you know what?
Yep.
I'm singling here, and if I lose, so be it. We'll fight next week. I don't think it does any good to double the ticket by using Indy Union. Like I said, I'm just going to go with Warm and move on.
Well, and there's not just a talent level question or positive associated with Warm in this spot. There's also a pace factor, because Mortal Storm is the only speed, and essentially the situation for Alex Cintron is to set up shop and just, you know, basically pick and choose when to attack Mortal Storm, because really Warm is got tactical speed and can sit close. You know, won the last time they tried the, you know, this distance. There's a lot to like about, you know, this spot for Warm. I very much agree, and especially, you know, for those that are going to try to tiptoe around on budget issues. We stay at Laurel and go right to the ninth, and in this case, another opportunity going the flat mile, but these are $25,000 maidens.
Yeah, I had this 4-3 as the A's with the 1 as the B. I went with Bold Trek. I know his lone dirt race wasn't, you know, that good. But, you know, let's just look at it from a buyer perspective, and whether you like him or you don't like him. I like to use him, if nothing else, as a point of reference. This guy was beating the length of the stretch, but he ran a 42. So the race was obviously super fast. 7 on the rocks, runs off the screen, puts up a big number. And now Bold Trek goes to the turf, and he really has improved. And the run last time where he got out the two turns, really, really improved. So I think he's going to have foundation on the cutback to what can be a demanding one-turn mile. And Steve, the bottom line is here, I don't really trust any of these dirt horses either. So, I'm kind of trying to get maybe a little funky, look for a fresh new face here. Ham Smith, we know how good of a job he does. 14% turf to dirt. That's good enough for me. A big bullet on November 8th. I think anytime a relatively cheap claimer wants to run a bullet in the morning, I mean, that's always a good sign. So I put Bold Trek on top with a little bit of value. I think he trips out in here as well. Certainly he's bred for this. Cantharos out of an Indian Charlie mare. And don't forget, that was only his second lifetime start. He was only going 5.5 furlongs. So you can be a little forgiving of that dirt start. So I put him on top. I think Galerio with a clean trip is the horse to beat. I mean, had trouble last time against better. So now he drops, stretches out a little bit, has a big one turn mile second over the track. You look at the races 2, 3, 4, and 5 back. They're going to win this. Now, I don't know what happened last time other than the trouble. If it knocked them for a loop, and no disrespect to Kevin Boniface, but, you know, 2 for 65 on the year is kind of the old tread lightly here. But I think on the face of it, Galerio is the horse to beat. So, like I said, the second A in there. I've got Junior Senator as a B. And, you know, who wants 5-2 on this horse? I know we're playing a horizontal sequence here, but I'm always leery, Steve, of the horse that literally runs the same race every time. And that's basically what you get with Junior Senator. I mean, the figures just all match up. And I think after 5 starts, you kind of have to ask yourself, well, why would today be the day? You know, it hasn't happened yet. He's never been close to the winner. I know he's come out of some relatively fast races for the level, and he's run on turf, and he's run on dirt, and he's accustomed to this trip. You know, I don't want anything to do with him as an A at an underlaid short price. I'll use him defensively underneath, but I think to me he's the type of horse you're supposed to try to beat in sequences like this. You know, I gave mention I didn't use to go lover. If you throw out the last race against Maiden Special Weights, the 2 turf races stack up pretty nicely. I mean, you know, there's some dirt breeding here. I don't think he's got a freak to get over the surface. And then, you know, Good Luck Chuck is very, very slow, but Boyce is here, and there's speed here as well on the stretch out. I mean, you know, if you're really searching, you could do worse than tossing him in. But I'd like to think, Steve, I could get through with these 3. Snidely, I guess, is in the mix, but, you know, 7-2 on the line. Yeah, he hasn't hit the board in 9 starts. Again, why would today be the day?
I know. Anyway, he's got that one race that is you know, you see, you know, sort of sits there and you think, if he runs back to that from ages ago. But that, when it comes to multis, you can't really.
That's the thing. We're not talking about that third and the triple here. Yeah, we're talking about winning. And I think that's where it makes it tough, and what makes these kind of sequences fascinating and very rewarding if you can get through.
Well, and this one feels like it could be this Stronach 5. We're going over it with Brian Nadeau. And Brian, out to Golden Gate for the 4th leg. It's a mile for 3 and ups, which have never won 2. I mean, that's the condition. And then there's Iron Alex, who, and a few others. It's kind of, I'm looking at the condition. I hadn't really noted the fact that there's quite a few that have never won 2 here. What I'm trying to figure out why the condition reads like that, which
it's
have
a
never
funky,
won.
Yeah. There's a couple on the outside with 3 and 5. So I thought, you know, as we talked at the start, Steve, this was the other race. I think so. I mean, I've got this in A and B's, and I'll talk about them. 2, 4, 9, 5 as my A's and 7, 8, 1 as my B's. So obviously, I have no conviction here. I just want to try to get to this race and hope I can get through it. You know, I look for value. I've got Van Cortlandt on top, but I've also got, you know, Uncontainable underneath as well. If we want to talk about Van Cortlandt, I think he's the horse to beat on the drop. I know he's been doing the turf thing, but he's also been facing better. Steve Miotti does a very good job in Northern California. So he would be no shock, but here's Sooner Better with the proven form over the track. I mentioned it at the start, too, in the maiden claiming race. I don't think it's a bad thing to be rising in class against a group like this. I mean, it shows Bob Hess shows some conviction here, a big track and distance winner. 2 back, certainly ran well for 8K last time. No reason that race can't play out here for 12 and a half. I mentioned Uncontainable as well with a good run last time, steps up from the two L's. But, you know, if he fires that race right back from an up-close kind of stalking position, there's no reason he can't be a player here. And, you know, Declare War would be my kind of, I don't know if it's so off the wall, Steve. I see 12-1 on the line. That seems a little ambitious, but there's some speed here. I've been doing the turf thing. Is not far off of these on figures and will offer some kind of value. So, you know, I thought I always like to at least put a price in there as well, because you don't want to be master of the obvious. I think a lot of times you look through these sequences and you're like, I got this. And then you look at them, you're like, man, I've got the three morning line favorites in every race, you know, and it just doesn't always play out that way. So I think there's some value in this race. And underneath, I've got the 7 Get Like Me, the 8 Leadville, and the 1 Iron Alex. And honestly, Steve, Leadville and Iron Alex, as you can see, were my last two inclusions, and they are 4-1 and 7-2 respectively on the morning line. So I think they've got a lot of holes in them. I think they are bees, but again, back to my original premise, I think there's value to be had in here. And if you can get through, A, if you can get alive to this race, B, if you can get through to this race, I mean, you've got a lot of opportunity for, as you kind of said, pretty big score today.
Well, and I'm just a little surprised that you relegated the Tameo gelding, Get Like Me, down to a B, 8-1, gets Frank Alvarado. They're a dangerous combination coming off of a win against a lower price level. But this is really a consistent gelding. Good Journey is fine on the synthetic. Yeah, that came off the win at Fresno, but has got plenty of performances that fit in here. I thought Get Like Me was very usable, kind of a mid pack type.
He was the first one that missed the cut. The reason is, you know, and maybe I'm nitpicking, the last two times that he did get over the Tapita were not good runs. Now, he seems to have found his form again, but I kind of looked at that as maybe the missed the cut line because of that. You look at the two runs back in January and February, they weren't that strong. Like I said, he has seemed to find himself a little bit, and so he missed the cut. And I will say this, folks, too. There will be updates after the scratches, so this would be the type of horse where if one of the four A's came out, he would probably move up to the A line.
No, fair enough. It big tickets are going to hit the all button here, is my guess, because it's a very confusing group. And let's go back and close it out back at Gulfstream West.
Yeah, and again, check the turf condition. Hopefully we're on. The rains are in play here. So, of course, you know, everybody knows that in South Florida. So just make sure you check that out. I just kind of went with the two favorites here, Steve. I think are the two favorites. I think clearly Bowtie Fair is the horse to beat. I mean, he just walloped 12 fives last time. The barn is 33% on the year. Jose D'Angelo, I'm not familiar with the barn, but that's good enough for me. A big figure last time, over this course as well, stretches out a little bit. That's not going to be a problem. So clearly, Bowtie Affair. I'll say this, Stephen. I wrote this. If you need a single, and it's somewhat of a defeatist attitude, but if you need a single, I never think it's a terrible thing to single on the end, because it allows for more coverage early, and then you can see what you're alive to, and then maybe you can hedge if it's a huge score, if not. And Bowtie Affair is probably, along with Warm earlier, on the short list of horses that you're probably looking to single. Now, I went for a little bit of an upset with Could Be, who was beaten comfortably by Bowtie Affair last time, but I think the race flow and the pace scenario are a lot different this time, Steve. I think Could Be dueled on the lead through very, very sharp fractions last time, predictably tired, but fought pretty hard. I mean, he fought pretty hard. He dropped back to 6, comes again a little bit, tires late. Now, today, with some trouble, too, I should note. today, we've got Navarro right inside of him with Animal Trick. So Animal Trick is clearly going on the return to the turf after some, you know, okay dirt race last time in a runoff two back. So Animal Trick is going, and I just think you mentioned it earlier at Laurel. I've got to believe Nick Suarez just sits right off of Animal Trick, buys his time, and then says, you know what, it's go time off the far turn. We're going to try to open up a little bit on Bowtie Affair. If he's good enough, so be it. If not, so be it as well. But I think the race flow today is a lot different and a lot more positive for could be than it was last time. So I'll play for a little bit of a upset kind of to make amends. And don't forget, he was favored at 2-1 last time. So it's not like, you know, people are expecting nothing out of him. So I'll go 9-1, or I'll go 9-6, excuse me. And that was it for me. I didn't have any backups. You know, I mentioned Unlock the Potential. I mentioned the Dow, Animal Trick if he gets brave on the lead. But I think, you know, with Unlock Potential, what happened last time? He was a total no-show. And I think when you're talking about 8K claimers, Steve, I think it's easier said than done just to say, well, he didn't run last time, he'll come back today. Yeah, that says to me maybe he's going the wrong way really, really fast. So I'll play against him. I think, you know, both. The other thing, too, is I mentioned this quite a bit, too. When you have a potential single, you know, I don't like to go too deep. It's one thing that I'm taking one shot against them. I don't know how profitable and how smart it is to take four shots against them. So I just have this 6-9 with could be in the mix as well.
Well, certainly New York players that bet Bowtie Affair when he won a lot of races. For Patty Reynolds, Bowtie Affair fans, they'll line up. The thing to like about Unlock the Potential in here is that I think there's plenty of pace that could, you know, that could set up the Crown of Thorns gelding. I'm not sure. I didn't get to this race, so I've got to make some decisions. But Brian's A play, if you want to jot down the A's only, 1-2-3-5-10 with the 3, with the 3-4, with the 2-4-5-9, with the 6-9. And that's an $80 play. And if you wanted to single the 9 in there, you could cut it down to $40. And all of what Brian just spoke about is at ExpressBet under his Stronach 5 analysis. And Brian can be found at the Tiki Bar most days all winter long where he holds court.
A truer statement has never been said.
Brian, I'm thrilled to get. We haven't talked in ages on air, so I'm thrilled to get you on and appreciate this big opportunity on a nice Friday. Good racing, really everywhere as well. Aqueduct and at Laurel and at Churchill, etc. Del Mar should be a really fun weekend. And wish if I don't talk between now and the holidays, happy Thanksgiving, and we'll see you down in Florida soon, and we'll talk again soon.
That sounds like a plan, Steve. A lot of pleasure. Thanks so much.
Brian Nadeau, and you should be following Brian. And, of course, a lot of you enjoy his Capital OTB work, the one sheet that he and Seth and everybody at Capital do. Follow Brian, C-O-T-B, Capital OTB, underscore Nadeau, N-A-D-E-A-U. Next time we'll have to talk to him about his, I'm sure, his Quebecois roots. You don't live in America with the last name Nadeau unless your relatives came from Quebec at one point or another. That's I'm going to go out on a limb and make that suggestion. We're going to stay right here, and Rick Hammerly to be followed by Ed DeRosa here in hour two. Hammer! He's down at Hot Springs. It's inching closer. Good morning.
Good morning, Steve. How are you? Yes, it's Hot Springs. It feels more like Cold Spring, New York, to tell you the truth, but it's warming up a little bit. It was in the 30s this morning.
Yeah, well, this is going to take some getting used to for you. I'll tell you that. You're you're going to get some freezing rain and some icy roads. I know it's been a long time since you've had to deal with that.
Yeah, you know, I'm get around. I've lived in New Jersey for 12 years. So when you live in New Jersey, as you know, you get a little bit of everything. So it's not as bad as I thought. I kind of overreacted on trying to get here when I was telling you that earlier in the week, Gina was in town in Tucson, and we were looking at the news, and they put the chill map up, and it showed the whole eastern part of the country, you know, pretty cold, and I was going, boy, look at that. And then I finally realized, oh, no, I'm headed that way. So here I am in the desert. I don't have a jacket. I don't have a sweatshirt. I have nothing. So I said, I better at least go try and find something. So funny story. At least I thought it was pretty funny. So I wanted to go get some gloves, at least some gloves. So I went to the local Walmart and walked in, and I looked around a little bit, and I didn't see any. So I asked the lady, and I said, excuse me, do you have any gloves? And she gave me a look like she didn't even know what gloves were. And I said, I'm not going to get anywhere here. So I continued around. I found another guy, and I said, excuse me, do you have any gloves? And he goes, oh, are you going to do some gardening? And I start laughing. I go, no, something to keep your hands warm. And he went to show me a little display with some pink gloves and green gloves, you know, so it wouldn't get your hands dirty type of thing. So anyway, it's pretty funny. I had to go to a sporting goods store. I think I might have got the only pair of gloves in Tucson. But anyway, they're really not needed here. It's pretty funny. I was here. When I drove through back from Kentucky Downs, I came through with that a couple months ago. And, boy, what a change. And I say change. At Oaklawn Park here, they're doing a ton of construction. And the addition to the casino, which is obviously just going to add on to the current one, I mean, that is like rolling. That's actually supposed to open, coincide with opening day here on January 24th. And then the hotel, which I don't think it was anything. They're up. They've got six floors already done as a skeleton of that, and right on the clubhouse turn there, and it's going up. That won't be open till next to the 2021. But bevy of activity here, and you know we're 2 months out from the meet, and everyone's, I mean, just excited about the meet. We had lunch the other day out, and you know they found out we worked at the racetrack, and everyone's going, oh, we can't wait, we can't wait. So the enthusiasm in this town already is something like I'm not used to, and it's kind of contagious. And even everyone here at the track is smiling, buzzing around, getting ready. That you can tell when the meet starts getting a little closer. You can see it in people's eyes, a little anxiousness, but a little hey, we better get going here. But a lot of stuff going on here, and looking forward to coming here for the season.
Hammer, explain. I know you got a meeting at the top of the hour. Explain the process. What's going to go on? Because the stalls, I wasn't sure when we talked the other day whether, as part of the expansion and the movement around the turn, what it was going to mean. I know they lost a couple of barns, but I guess that they just relocated them. The stalls, the amount of stalls, the same as always, or did they add some barns? And how are you going to deal with all the horsemen that seemingly want to come to Oaklawn this year?
Well, in part of the construction, and I've got Jennifer Hoyt here behind me, so if I say something terribly wrong, she can cut in and correct me.
She'll kick you right in the shins. That's what
she will. Yes, well, yes, she will. So I mentioned a hotel. Thank you. I mentioned a hotel, and it's going up in the clubhouse turn, and I've been on the backside here a few times over the years, and I'm not. Everybody remembers where the kitchen was. I mean, one of the all-time great kitchens at racetracks. It's one of the kitchens where you actually say where you want to meet me at the kitchen, because it was not only the food good, it was just a good place to meet. So that strip of barns in the kitchen there is gone, and there's been some new barns in the kitchen. Obviously, has been relocated. And there's some new barns that were replaced, the barns that were knocked down for the construction. And they're on the backside, like if you look straight across the track or the half-mile pole area. So some, how many barns? Three? four. I think four, six new barns.
Six new barns
to replace the number. So the number's right around the same in the high 1,500s, close to 1,600 stalls. So that has really remained unchanged, and we are in the process of going over the stalls, and you know, I can't really get too detailed about it, but it is amazing to see people applying from north, south, east, and west, literally, want to come to Oaklawn. Of course, they've always had a big demand here, but with the purses the way they are and can going to continue to grow, this Midwest Oaklawn Kentucky circuit has really, you know, knocking on the door of being the circuit right now, and then it's going to be in the next 4 or 5 years, I think, develop into one of, if not the top circuit in the country. So a lot of interest, you know, filtering through them, a lot of regulars, and but a lot of new people coming. And I think when the list comes out next week and people start getting their letters and it starts, you know, getting out who's thinking about coming here, I think it'll be great to see some new names on the program here, and I know they're looking forward to it. So, you know, it's a total different atmosphere here than I've been in. It's plus plus. People want to come, and they're excited, and you know, it's pretty cool. And you know what? Since we're here, and Jennifer's in the room, might have some good news for the listeners out there. The C word, calendars.
Calendars.
and Jennifer just handed me a proof of one, and she mentioned maybe we need to get you a few hundred. I said, absolutely. So I think we're going to bring back the calendars, maybe not in the amount, but we'll have a few hundred, and we'll hopefully come up with, you know, what they have to do. We did some fun things about people sending in some pictures and answering a few questions. So I think when we get it done, I think now they won't be out before the first of the year because I don't get back here until the first. But first part of January might be, so listen in. We'll have our calendar thing. We'll have a limit on it. But I think Oakland's coming through, baby, coming with the calendar. So that'll be good news.
Nice. I love it. Hammer, I've got to touch on the news of the last, 36 hours going out, you know.
Back, I thought you were going to talk about the Steeler game.
Well, the Steeler game, I actually had fallen asleep, so I didn't see the mayhem, but mayhem it was. Jesus. Yeesh.
Yeah, boy, I'm telling you.
Yeah.
Anyway, we'll talk about that off the air.
All right.
I mean, the refs lost total control of that game, and it was pretty bad. I mean, I tell you, for a moment, I mean, thinking about getting rid of my season tickets at home, is that we'll see. I want to see what our friend in the commissioner's office there does about this one, because this is about as bad as it gets. So anyway, go ahead. Didn't mean to throw you off.
Well, speaking of losing control, it feels like racing interests are going to lose control of the CHRB. And I read Dan Ross's Q&A with Madeline Arbach, and I mean, some of what she, of course, had to say was. You know, a little self-serving, but she's not wrong when she points out that, you know, I had Alan Foreman as well to address this. There's going to be a refashioned CHRB, Rick, and it feels like there's going to be an added layer of obtrusive
politicalness.
Yes, into the whole scene, and frankly, you know, given the CTT and you know, the TOC and the way things are structured anyway in California, it feels like that this is just a recipe for a further difficulties.
I did read that interview last night. You can tell a lot of frustration underlying some of the comments that Madeline made. Madeline has been involved in the game for a long, long time. You can tell how passionate she is, and when she says she does things for the care of the horse, that is 100% correct. She is the one who started Karma, in California, and quite frankly, I think was one of the people that kick-started the awareness of the need for aftercare or retirement. I don't like the word aftercare. Aftercare, I think, hear the word aftercare, I think of, you know, taking care of my parents. It makes it sound like these horses, when they're done racing, are all in need of some, you know, hospitalization or something. And when indeed most of the horses that retire are well enough and fit enough and to go into other careers. I've been doing some talks on that at University of Arizona. We've been talking about aftercare and doing some research on that, and it's fantastic what's been going on. But so she's in that. You know, as you know, she was part of with Barry with Unusual Heat. That, you know, the stallion, one of the biggest local stallions I've ever seen. You know, just to have an effect on the whole breed out in California. She was part of that. So she's been in the game a long time. Been on the commission. A lot of frustration coming out as well. But as you said, the look of the board is going to change. No one really knows what's going to happen, and you know her fears are that it's going to become a political machine. And a week from yesterday, on November 21st, next Thursday, is a California Horse Racing Board meeting. And the meeting in October was shelved; they canceled it for one reason or another. And because of that, the agenda items—I think there's 20-25 agenda items. Listed for the meeting, and it's going to be a long one. And I think a lot of horsemen, donors, trainers, anyone is going to be a lot of interest in this meeting. I think they're hoping for some kind of resolve, some kind of direction. I think that's one of the main concerns for horsemen out there is. They just want to know what is going to happen. You know, tell us what we're looking at. You know, horsemen are very resilient. They, you know, a lot of things happen and they bounce back. They just need to have some kind of a plan in their head that, okay, in 6 months we're going to do this. In a year, this is what it's going to look like. And they'll do what it takes to get there. And I think this meeting is going to be very, very. It's going to be a big thing. People listen; they're going to want to come out. I think leave that meeting with some kind of direction, the way the racing is going to go, and then there'll be some decisions made after that. So, like I said, so you know, Rick Baedeker, who was the. You know, I'm not sure how that hierarchy works. He wasn't on the commission. He was the director of the horse racing board. I'm not sure, you know, who was in charge of who, but he was there for 6 years, I believe. He's leaving. Madeline's leaving. Of course, Chuck Winter, who was the head of the commission for at least 4 years. He is stepped down. And one of the other commissioners has been out. So there'll be three or four appointees openings, and we'll have to see how that goes. You know, the universal argument of all commissions, should there be people on the board that have interest in racing, meaning, you know, owners type of people? Or
yeah, we discussed that with Alan. Yep.
Yeah, should there just be, you know, people that, you know, used to work for Mattel or used to work at Ford on there, and they're used to being on boards, but they don't know anything about horse racing? You know, it's a tough argument. Racing's a very incestuous game. Everybody knows somebody or has a brother or a cousin or is involved in the game, and so it's tough. To deal with that. Most people are fair, and so maybe it's time to go to some, you know, retired type people. They're doing that with Greg Ferraro. They're bringing him back to have some kind of knowledge, but don't have any current interest in the game. You got Alex Solis on there, an ex-jockey, who can you know, espouse his knowledge a little bit. He knows a little, you know, he obviously knows the game a little bit. So I mean, I got to think somewhere in there is a good mix, is a good idea. But I don't know, the governor, we don't know what the governor's thinking in California. He's new, doesn't have a great reputation among some people about getting stuff done. I mean, he was the one that was in, he was the mayor of San Francisco, and you know, face it, that city has not, you know, been on the news on the good side lately, and things are happening in the state. But, you know, let's hope he does the right thing, and they can come together on next week and at least have some semblance of a plan so people know what's going to happen in the state racing-wise.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. That's the thing. I mean, because nobody that as we experienced in New York on a couple of different occasions, breeders in particular and owners, they want to know where things are. They got decisions to make about where to drop foals. There's time for people to move mares out of state, et cetera, and. You know, people have so much invested, Rick. I mean, that's the part of this that is just sort of glossed over. While people who are completely uninvolved, seem hell bent on making decisions for everybody else.
Yeah, and I just can't. This is a very, very deep game. You're right. These are people are invested heavily, and it's not like they can just, okay, well, I'm out tomorrow. They, like you said, they got mares, they've got farms, they've got breeding operations. You can't just shut them, turn the lights off and say we're out type of thing. It's very, it's a very deep business. And that's why I think you need some people with background in racing in charge, at least to give some advice there. Throwing you and me in put us in charge of some assembly line at Chevrolet or something. We don't know what's going on, and trying to make some decisions. So I'm hoping that's what happens here in this board. I don't know if there's going to be any major decisions, but I think there'll be some direction, at least some idea of which way they're headed, and it'll give some people a chance to make some decisions. But you're right. I mean, there's a lot of jobs at stake, as Oscar De La Hoya, not De La Hoya, Oscar De La Torre and his group have pointed out. And very articulately, we've had him on the show a few times. I mean, there's, 50, 60, 70,000 jobs statewide that are at stake here. And the people need to know that when they're making decisions about that many people's lives.
Yeah, exactly. Well, Hammer, I appreciate it. I appreciate your response. I kind of threw that at you without
that's
prequel.
That's the way we roll.
There you go. Well, get to work, assign some stalls. I'm sure that there's quite a few horsemen that we're going to see some new names in the PPs when everybody opens them up in January for opening weekend at Oaklawn. They're going to see some names that they aren't going to be racing at Hot Springs for the first time. So it should really only enhance what is already a great racing experience.
Yeah, I think so, and I'm going to throw one more thing in here for my other spot, Kentucky Downs. Speaking of improvements, they're basically doing the same thing here. They've doubled the space of their casino floor. They had a groundbreaking yesterday, and so they're doubling their casino space and then putting in more machines and then adding some amenities for the fans, the local fans that show up, because so many do. Been a little overwhelmed last year, and I think it'll be a little bit more fan-friendly there as well. And, there's a lot of good vibe here in this part of the country about racing. And so we're moving on. And so it's always, like I said, it's always a pleasure to talk to you. And we'll be back at Tucson next week, and we'll talk then.
Excellent. I locked up my travel, by the way.
Perfect. When you coming in?
Sunday, the whatever that is, the 8th, right? Sunday
the
8th.
I think it's the 8th. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And speaking of that, what we're talking about, Steve's talking about, is the symposium on racing, which is held every year in Tucson at the Lozman Town of Canyon. This year, it's the December 9th, 10th, and 11th. And so check it out. Public's welcome. You can come and, register and come and. There's some very interesting panels we're assembling for this year, as with every year, and Steve will be there again covering it, and we'll kind of let you know what's going on. So glad to hear you're coming. And guess what? I mean, we're talking, what, 3-4 weeks? It's right around the corner. December's almost
here. I know, exactly. And I am going to go a couple days before back out to L.A., and we'll be at Los Al for the Starlet and the Futurity, and then the next day come to Arizona. And I should mention that since we're talking about symposium, if you register by November 27th, you save $100 on your registration. So those that are going to be attending, FYI. Hammer, thanks a lot.
Thanks a lot, Stephen. Good to hear Casey's voice again. Casey,
right?
You're back.
Casey on the
Absolutely.
Board today, everybody. I love it. Exactly. We're going to stay right here. Ed